CD 6, Achieving Goals with the Target Jump, Module 18, Quantum Jumping Towards Your Goal. Quite possibly among the most important thing that you can do with quantum jumping, or with any other philosophy or self-development process, would be that of setting goals for yourself, setting up a target, so to speak. But it doesn't do any good to set up a target if you just set it up and then forget about it. The target must be used, and that too is an issue we'll be addressing here, that of action. Objectives and actions must, of a necessity, go along side by side. Here's where the quantum jump comes in to stimulate both the objective and the action. Lester Sindelar was a student of mine who complained that he set many goals, but none of them seemed to come to fruition. What, he asked, was he doing wrong? He used one of the standard goal-setting devices, that of creating an image of himself with his goal completed, and then whenever he thought about his goal, he thought about the successful outcome, just as he understood he was supposed to do. But alas, nothing ever came of it. When Lester came to my class, I asked him for specifics. What was his goal? Exactly what actions did he take? And was the goal realistic? His goal was a luxury automobile. He'd heard that simply by visualizing it, the car would come to him. And I've known a lot of people who, after learning the visualization process, have done exactly that. One friend, Helene Hatzel, had even written a book about it, The Name It and Claim It Game. This was about how she entered contests, visualized the end result of herself winning, and did indeed win many of the contests that she entered. So why wasn't Lester's visualizations working for him? Or was there more to it than that? Well, first of all, the goal should be somewhat realistic. Programming for a $10 million boat because you saw a picture of Tiger Woods' yacht, that's fine if your income warrants it, but not if you're making $70,000 or $80,000 a year. But why is that, you may ask? If it works, why not for any number? The main reason is that there's a little voice in your subconscious saying something like, "Who are you kidding? A $10 million yacht? No way." Most people don't feel deserving of the things that they're setting goals for. Oh, I know, you may think, well, I deserve the best. But that's on the outer conscious level. There are many levels of consciousness. The three best known are the physical, the mental, and the spiritual. When all three are in concert, you will get the things that you want. As a matter of fact, when all three levels are in correspondence, say, you won't have to program for anything. Things just come to you automatically. Now we have a new question. Now the question is, how do you get the physical, the mental, and the spiritual levels of consciousness working together for the things that you want? The mental level is the easiest to handle. You just see yourself, you visualize yourself with the thing you want in hand. That's what everybody teaches, isn't it? If only it were that easy. If it were that easy, there'd be no poverty in the world, there'd be no illness, there'd be no unpleasantness. But it's not that easy for a reason. And for that, we would have to address the issue of the spiritual plane of consciousness. But before that, what would be the job of the physical level? Not hard to figure that out. It's action. I'll get back to that in a bit. Let's tackle the spiritual level for a moment. This is where most events that cause problems are forever stored. I relate that to a computer server and email. Say that the computer itself is representative of the physical level, and the email you write is the mental level, while the server who stores the email is responsible for the spiritual level. Okay, then the email you write is like a problem that you had that creates a feeling of guilt or regret. Those feelings are the sources of limitations. You've been a bad girl, a bad boy, and you don't deserve whatever it is that you're programming for. but you've managed to suppress the regret and it's out of your mind. You can delete the email you wrote, but it's always there with your server. And just as the erased email is there with your server, the original incident that caused the problem is sitting there in your spiritual consciousness. That you can't erase. Well, then how do you deal with it? How do you deal with an event in the past that you feel guilty about or that you regret? Or, for that matter, why should you have to? And what does this have to do with goal setting? Patience, please. Let me get a bit further into limitations. The problem is with the sin-guilt-punishment factor. To simplify, sin is a missing of the mark, a mark that other people have set for you. Authority figures in your youth generally who lay down a set of rules, things that you should do, things that you shouldn't do, things that you have to do, and things that you do not have to do. Well, say that you do something that you feel you shouldn't have. You miss the mark, so to speak. A feeling comes over to you that's hard to define. It's a feeling that you should go back over the thing and correct it. That feeling we call guilt. Guilt is an urge to go back and do it right. But what if you don't or can't go back and do it right? Well, then you've been bad, and your inner conscious comes into play with the next member of the trio, punishment, which, quite simply, is a reminder that you have not corrected yourself. But you can't, because the person that you disrespected, say, is no longer among the living. Or the one you spoke unkindly to won't talk to you. What then? Well, then punishment comes into play in the form of limitations. You've been bad, so you only deserve so much. You only deserve so much in the way of income. You only deserve so much in the way of health, of relationships, of knowledge, of whatever. Well, you get the point. Limitations will hamper every goal-setting program ever conceived, and that includes the laws of attraction that have been made so popular of late. These are not the insignificant events that I spoke of, but rather something else entirely, as they're seldom insignificant when they happen. With respect to Lester Sindelar and his programming for a luxury automobile, I found something rather interesting when we were working out some of the material of quantum jumping. He said to me once, "Bert, when you were talking about doing things in the past that causes problems, like me not getting the things I programmed for, would something like being in a car wreck be stopping me?" It turned out that when Lester was still learning to drive, he was 16 at the time, he had borrowed his father's car without telling anyone, and he and his cousin went joyriding. Unfortunately, Lester lost control of the car and flipped it. His cousin was killed in the accident. 20 years later, he had all but forgotten the incident. It was brought back to him when I discussed guilt and programming. Now this is almost a classic example of limitations. If ever anyone thought they didn't deserve a fine automobile, this was it. All the programming in the world wouldn't get Lester his car. And if by some chance it happened, he wouldn't feel comfortable with it. Before Lester worked with another goal-setting process, he had to unburden himself of that emotion, the emotions that were tied to the accident that killed his cousin. With an understanding of quantum jumping and the idea of infinite universes, the answer, to me at least, was obvious. I say obvious because what Lester has to do is to go over the incident of the accident and change it. In a world of infinity where everything that could be imagined is, all Lester has to do is to jump into one of the millions of universes where the accident didn't happen. Meet his twin self, meet his cousin who was not in an accident and therefore wasn't killed. Now then, you might ask, well, wait a minute. How can simply imagining he's meeting his twin self and cousin in another universe help him to get his goals and objectives? I actually can answer that. Not with guesswork, either. As you may be aware, I've been a hypnotist for more than 50 years. I've also taught others for many years the art of hypnotherapy. I've had a good deal of experience in that line, and I found something interesting while teaching past life therapy, which entails taking a person to a past life that is having an effect on the problem at present. Just simply by walking them through it and then bringing the person out of trance, the problem was resolved. That was through hypnotherapy. Now, the first time I noted that, I thought it was pure coincidence, but it happened again and again. Once in a class in Paris, France, I did a hypnovision training, and one of the trainees had a problem with her arm. The woman, we'll call her Adele, asked to be the subject for the demonstration. Her problem was that her right hand and arm had pained her for most of her life. Doctors could find no physical cause for the pain. Her fingers were extremely weak, and she could barely hold a pen to sign her name. She was in a trance, and I regressed her and asked where she was. She responded that she was in a crowd. Everyone was much bigger than she was, and a lot of shouting was going on. It turned out that she was a 6-year-old child, and her mother was being hung for stealing milk from a cow. It seemed as though she was in a small village in France around the 17th century. Now, do remember, this is a regression, a past life regression. Her father was holding on to her hand tightly so that she wouldn't get lost in the crowd. And she was frantic with fear. There were hundreds of people around her shouting and jostling. Her father was crying and had a grip of steel, almost crushing her right hand. When the woman was hanged, her mother, the crowd surged forward and the grip was gone. Her father's hand wasn't there any longer. She was torn away from her father by the milling crowd. Her father was then taken by the crowd, and he was beaten to death. The 6-year-old that had been Adele was picked up by a soldier who protected her and carried her away from the mob. The last thing that Adele said while still in trance was, "The soldier, it's Edouard." Edouard was her husband who was in the class. She came out of trance, ran to her husband crying, and hugged him. The pain in her hand and arm was gone and didn't come back. I've told that story almost exactly as it happened, except for her name. I don't recall her name. Now, I don't know why that happened. I only know that it did. And so perhaps, just perhaps, quantum jumping gets us the same result as past life therapy. Well, then again, maybe past life therapy gets the same result as quantum jumping. Don't question it. Just use it. That was a pretty typical case of regression, past life regression. Most of them are similar to that, and I've been involved literally with hundreds. Now, does that prove reincarnation? Not necessarily. No one can actually prove it. One just takes it on faith. But if a billion people believe in something, doesn't that prove its existence? Well, what about the other billion who believe the opposite? I do believe that the end of life is the beginning of something else. One of our great principles, the principle of rhythm, establishes that when something ends, something always begins. An afterlife, if you will. Reincarnation, maybe. Morantia worlds where souls evolve into greater entities? Perhaps. Oblivion? No. That I do not believe. Nature doesn't act that way. When something ends, something else begins. That's the law of the universe. As I mentioned, it's the principle of rhythm. All things are cyclical. When your day ends, night begins. When night ends, day begins. When you go to sleep at night, your day, you might say, dies, then your sleep cycle is born. When your sleep cycle dies, ends, then your day is born. It's a law of nature. When something is born, something else has died. There is no death without birth, and no birth without death. I choose to believe that we have had past lives, and that we will have future lives. Now, what's the value to that? Well, let's see. In an infinite world with an unending number of universes parallel to our own, your past lives are now. If it's infinite, then anything is possible. That's the key to seeing who you were, and if it's of interest, who you will be. In one respect, in an infinite universe with an infinite number of parallel universes, there would be no time conception whatever. Let me explain that. Infinity is limitless, endless, and all-encompassing. In an infinite universe, whatever can be imagined is. Therefore, in one of the parallels, it will be what we see as 900 BC. In another, it's 3500 AD. In another, the Big Bang is just banged. And in another, well, you get the idea. Whatever you can imagine is in a limitless parallel universe, in an infinite universe. That being the case, there are a limitless and infinite number of yous as well in all that vast mass of galaxies. The solar systems and how many planets are there? I don't know if you're aware of it, but the scientific community, the astrologers, now pretty much assume that there are a trillion planets in our galaxy alone. Now, not only are you everything that everyone is, you are in every time as well. Now, this concept takes a bit of thought. And if you believe me to be exaggerating or maybe off my rocker, there are many highly specialized quantum physicists who accept this concept. Indeed, at the level of quanta, the smallest particles, actions can only be explained by a parallel world. At any rate, the parallel universe concept, as scientifically bizarre as it might sound, is the closest that science gets to spirituality. For if, in a parallel universe, everything imaginable is possible, then the spiritual nature of man exists as well as the physical. But back to the time concept in a world of infinities. Your past lives are being lived right now. On a parallel world just like this one, your future lives as well, but we're only addressing the past life for now. That being so, you need not go into any regressions to discover what your previous life was like. Your previous life can be discovered simply by tapping into a parallel universe where you're living that life now. In a parallel infinite universe, to get to a past life, you don't regress, you jump. But the effect is the same. You're getting a sense of a past life. Karma, that ancient philosophy that speaks of the apparent fact that the quality of your life is determined by your behavior in a previous one, is the concept that reincarnationalists pretty much all believe in. What you have sown in a past life, you will reap in your present one, or a future one. A friend of mine always had trouble with her right knee. Once she sprained it, another time she broke it, it would heal, something else would happen. She'd skin it or trip and land on it. Always something else, always the right knee. One day I saw Barbie after she had returned from Arizona where she lived. She was limping. Seeing me, she laughed and said, "Boy, I must have kicked a lot of ass in my last life." That pretty much sums up karma. A billion or more people believe in that concept. As you believe, so it will be. If you have a karmic debt, it will be paid. But what if? What if the concept of parallel universes is valid? Then you'd have a choice of seeking a past life. You could either go into a past life by regressing, or go to a past life in another dimension, a parallel universe, where you are presently living that life that is having an effect on your present one. One of the things that I have found after years of regressing people into past lives was that it didn't seem to matter what was done in the past life. Just by going there seemed to relieve the problems of the present. Perhaps it was simply a release caused by the visit. I don't know. Now the question will arise, well, how do you do it? Is there some kind of a technique involved? When projecting oneself into a past life or a parallel mirror image in a different time, the technique is similar. Intent and imagination take you there. Scientists would rather consider parallel and infinite universes than past lives. Meditation is involved, as is the Bhaga technique of getting the mind ready by touching the roof of your mouth with the tip of your tongue. You must want to go into a past life for some reason, presumably to resolve a problem. That should be your purpose and intention to get rid of the thing that's bothering you. All that Lester did was to go to his twin self that was in a universe where he did not borrow his father's car, and so didn't cause the accident that killed his cousin. Here, his cousin was alive in that particular universe, and that was where Lester jumped. And the aftermath was that now we could set up a goal that may well come to pass. I say may well because there's never an absolute guarantee to something working at a specific time. We can use the material, and at the very least, we will generate energies that will help us along in life. Now then, you might think, but Lester's cousin is not alive, and going to a parallel where he is alive won't bring him back to this universe. No, it won't. But that's not the point. The point is that Lester was bothered by the guilt attached to the incident, and the guilt was relieved when he walked through the parallel universe where his cousin was alive. The next quantum jump will be for a goal, something that you want or something that you want to happen. What will your goal be? Think about that, because during the next jump, you'll be going to a universe where you already have it, or at least your twin self does. When that door opens, imagine that you know where you want to go. You want to go to that universe where you already have what you're programming for. Just imagine that you're there and create a scene that you would want for yourself. Okay? Right. Now just relax. Find a place where you'll be undisturbed for 15 minutes or so, and we will begin.